Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I am joined by the great Isabel Brown, Turning Point USA spokesperson. I will call her the unofficial campus correspondent for us at Turning Point USA. Please support our podcast at charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions at freedom@charliekirk.com. You are not going to believe what is happening in our universities of contact tracing students at all times, 24/7 surveillance, World War II memorials being taken down, and so much more. Isabel Brown is here with the Frontline Report. You guys want to hear this. If you have kids in college, if you are in college, of ways you can fight back, and we dive deeper into what's happening with our nation's youth. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. I am thrilled to be joined by a friend, someone who has been fighting on campus for liberty and freedom and for America for quite some time now, Isabel Brown, who actually works with us at Turning Point USA as a contributor, former chapter leader at Colorado State University, hosted me on campus back in February of 2018.
Yep.
Isabel, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm so excited to be here and so excited to think about the journey we've had since then to now.
Yes. So first, introduce yourself to our audience. You grew up in Colorado, hosted a Turning Point event. I went there. That was made national news. It's quite a while ago. It was 2.5 years ago. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, well, it's so great to know everybody and to get to know you more as we continue to do some more engagements together with me and Charlie. I am Turning Point USA's spokesperson on the contributor team. So I do a lot of work in traditional media and digital media as well, talking about what's happening on college campuses and even high school campuses these days with how crazy everything's gotten for indoctrination. I never intended on working in politics or communications or social media, anything in this realm. I was actually pre-med in college. So really, politics found me with the insanity at my school, Colorado State University, and I completely fell in love with Turning Point USA through sort of a random fate of chance. I saw a Facebook ad for YWLS as a sophomore student.
The Young Women's Leadership Summit.
Yes, indeed. And thought, wow, I have no idea what this is all about, but something in my gut tells me I have to go. And from that first conference, completely fell in love.
So you went to YWLS 17 or 18?
17. Yep.
And that was in Dallas.
It was. Yeah. It was an amazing experience. And the first words that you said at that conference still stick with me. You said, this is not a safe space and there will be no trigger warnings this entire conference. We're here to challenge what you believe and why you believe it. And that's really the mission of what Turning Point has done in my life and the life of so many other people. So went back to CSU that fall and started a chapter. And that's really when the ball started rolling for me in terms of advocacy.
And you hosted me in a lot of different ways. It was kind of the campus speech that put my speaking on the map. There were all sorts of protests outside. Needless to say, bad people on both sides clashing. I think that's fair to say. And the event was totally packed. I'll never forget it. Some of the best, most viral clips we've ever done are from that event.
Yeah.
And then you hosted us again, I think.
It was my sister, actually.
That's
so
right.
After I graduated, you guys
family.
Came back. Yep. With the same Turning Point chapter, then run by my sister with Don Jr. and Kim. Also a crazy event,
about a year
I've
ago.
Heard. Yep. Very recently.
And
so.
Thousands and thousands of people were there. And that's when the president of Colorado State University called us all these awful names.
Yeah, unsurprisingly
right?
These days. But that's been such a rude awakening, I think, for me. When we first started getting started with our campus events, when I was trying to build the chapter even just 2 years ago, they were still trying to hide the fact that they were such a leftist university. And I think that's so true for all college campuses across the country. Now it's really open.
So we're going to dive into it. I asked you to prepare some campus craziness and campus insanity, some professor shenanigans happening in our country, and we have professorwatchlist.org at Turning Point USA that I encourage everyone to check out. Before we get into that, can you just give parents a little bit of an idea of how bad colleges actually are? I talk about it at length. I do run a college organization, but I never went to college myself. Isabel, is it as bad as people say?
It's worse than people say. It is absolutely shocking what is happening at our nation's institutions of higher education these days. And I think what's so alarming to me is that it's not just shocking to parents or grandparents who may have graduated 20, 30, mm-hmm. 40, 50 years ago. It's shocking to people who graduated 5 years ago and even 2 years ago. The level of insanity just keeps exponentially growing
it's
in these colleges.
Worse.
Yeah. They're determined to shove leftism down your throat in any way humanly possible, not just in your academics, but in every extracurricular, in your dorm, when you're eating in the dining hall with your friends. Every poster that lines the hallways of the residence halls is all about racial justice this year. It's all about say everyone's name, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. If you don't adhere to the very radical Marxist ideas of BLM Incorporated, you're not welcome on campuses these days. And you will fail your classes if you fail to adhere to your professor's political ideology these days.
And is it fair to say that there's very little learning that's happening anymore at these institutions?
It's not about learning at the end of the day. It's about indoctrination, which is so unfortunate because college used to be this place where you were encouraged to explore all sorts of opinions and ideas on every subject. And you were there to broaden your thinking, not to narrow it. But unfortunately, now in 2020, you're there to have one subscribed set of ideas crammed into your mind.
So let's get into some of these examples here.
There's some great ones.
I tell people – the last question I'll ask before we get to that is – would you hesitate to automatically send your kids to college if you were a parent?
100%, yes. And I say that as someone with an undergraduate degree and a graduate degree at this point.
From
Georgetown, yeah. I went to graduate school in D.C. the last year.
Two times as many degrees as I have.
It's very exciting, and I'm definitely a nerd, so I love school. And I know that's unpopular to say, but it's very, very scary to me. I was in the hard sciences for both my undergraduate and graduate education, and even in classes like anatomy and physiology and chemistry, we were talking about the wall and President Trump's latest viral tweet. We weren't talking about the things that I was paying tuition to go to school for.
So I tell parents all the time, I say, be very careful sending your kids to college. And I got in a discussion an undisclosed location. I don't want to out this person, but it was a great conversation and she meant really well. But I asked this parent, and I hadn't had something to eat almost all day, so my blood sugar was running low and I just have very little patience at times for this stuff. But I was still kind, but this woman came up. She says, yeah, I have two daughters at some Northeast school. I don't want to completely out the conversation. She said, this Northeast school. I said, why are they there?
Hmm.
And she said, well, because it's a good school. I said, no, but why are they at college? And she said, well, to get a degree. I said, why are they trying to get a degree? She said, well, that's what they have to do.
Exactly.
Said,
that is
such
a notion apparent. That we believe in.
I said, why do they have to go? She said, well, if they don't go, they're not going to succeed. I said, why? She said, because everyone says that. So maybe everyone's wrong. And she said, no one's ever said that before. This is a really well-educated,
mm-hmm.
upper-middle-class woman who meant really well. And I just kept asking. I said, no, seriously, what is she learning? She said, well, they keep coming home and they're turning into liberals. I said, so let me get this straight. You're paying money for what? And this is one of the biggest lies in America is that you must go to college to succeed. I mean, you're incredibly intelligent and you got plenty of degrees. I don't. But you actually have more credibility than I do to make this argument because you have the degrees and you're saying you don't need the degrees.
Absolutely, 100%. And obviously, I chose to go a different direction than going to medical school, which was my traditional plan when it came to education. But looking back, there are so many things that I realized I didn't really need to be sitting in a college classroom for. And why was I paying tuition to learn about things that had nothing to do with my degree at the end of the day? It wasn't preparing me to be a better doctor or to go to a better graduate school. It was just preparing me to think like everybody else on my campus. And that's not the reason we should go to college.
Look, I want to tell you about Good Ranchers, the best meat out there. Good Ranchers is very simple. If you guys want high-quality meat delivered to you quickly, Good Ranchers is the solution. It began with the standard of bringing top-quality 100% American-born, raised and harvested meat to families across America. This vision was instilled into them from their grandparents that owned community grocery stores and believed in trust, charity, and family values. GoodRanchers.com partners directly with only American ranchers from across the United States to bring the highest quality meat straight to your door. GoodRanchers.com, get 100% American-raised beef right to your door, beef the way it used to be. Look, for the price of a family going out to dinner, you can fill your freezer with quality meats with Good Ranchers with an S.com. Skip the grocery store mystery meat and buy direct from GoodRanchers.com, great meals with Good Ranchers. So get 100% American-born and harvested beef and chicken delivered straight to your door. Visit GoodRanchers.com to find the perfect package for your family. Get the good stuff with Good Ranchers. T-bones, ribeyes, fillets, and more Don't forget, home delivery is always free. So here's what you do. You go to goodranchers.com, use the promo code Charlie to save $20 off your first purchase. That is goodranchers.com right now. Use the promo code CHARLIE and save $20 off for a limited time only. Goodranchers.com, promo code Charlie. That is goodranchers.com, promo code Charlie. Isabel, campus insanity. I asked you for a frontline report. So everybody, again, Isabel works at us at Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. We have professorwatchlist.org. And you guys can follow Isabel at what social media channel?
On Instagram and Facebook, it's at the Isabel Brown.
At the Isabel Brown.
And on Twitter, it's at the Isabel B.
So I said, Isabel, surprise me and stun me with the campus news. Go.
There's some really crazy things happening these days. So I'm going to start with just generally what's happening on campuses. And then we're going to dive into more specifically what's happening with professors. Because, oof, those stories are absolutely crazy.
And those can be found on professorwatchlist.org.
They sure can. All right. So as we know, several universities have implemented really strict policies associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. If you haven't heard about some of these things, the idea of student privacy and transparency with their university has completely gone out the window. And this line of what's considered acceptable continues to move further and further and further to the left. For example, the University of Tennessee is going to require all students and faculty to get not only the flu vaccine when it becomes available this fall, but also the COVID-19 vaccine if they want to keep working there or going to school there.
So you will not be allowed to go to University of Tennessee unless you get the Chinese coronavirus vaccine.
You will have your admission revoked if you refuse to get the vaccine. There's no exemptions provided to students, which is absolutely insane.
Wow.
Schools are even taking it steps further than that. Oakland University started the school year by mandating that all students who live on campus wear this little button that they call a bio button that constantly tracks your heart rate, respiratory rate, your temperature, and reports that 24/7 to the university administration, even when you're off campus.
This is Oakland.
Just in case you might have COVID-19.
How is that not chipping? It's almost as if they're monitoring you in real time.
It absolutely is. And it doesn't matter. As soon as you step foot off campus, they're still tracking you. They're still making a note of where you are, who you've interacted with. If your heart rate gets too high, I'm sorry, doesn't your heart rate get too high if you're nervous about an exam or talking
out
to someone you have a crush on or working out at the gym? But all of a sudden, you're pegged as a potential case of COVID-19 on campus if you wore this button. So obviously, there was a lot of pushback from students. They decided to make it optional and not mandatory, but most students were encouraged to still do that, and faculty were as well. Insane to me that this is
Oakland.
Where we have become. Yeah,
we
Oakland
are.
University.
So parents, listen carefully to this. So at Tennessee, if your kid doesn't get the vaccine, that's going to spread to more universities. They are going to force your kid to get the vaccine. And in Oakland, they're going to track you. They're going to 1984 style track all of your movements.
Yep, absolutely. They actually are already doing that. So it's not even just something they want to do in the future.
It's happening
right now as we speak. Bio button is their fancy name for their little device that they pioneered.
Ridiculously scary.
It is.
Very
it's terrifying.
Yes.
And I love that you used the 1984 analogy because, honestly, campuses in 2020 look a lot more like campuses in George Orwell's 1984. Tulane University is just one of many students encouraging students to call the police if their friends are violating COVID-19 policies on campus, narc on each other, take videos, send it to the university administration. We're creating this thought police community where all of a sudden, if you even think about breaking a rule, you're outed and you're no longer
so
welcome.
Tulane. I know some big donors to Tulane. No
Tulane
one should give
University.
Them money.
Yeah, divest you. We talk a
we
lot
have,
about
we
with Turning Point USA.
$74 million divested.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very excited about that at divestyou.com. So that's the virus stuff.
That's the virus. But what's most alarming about the virus is that they seem to have all of these programs implemented to stop students from getting sick. But at the end of the day, it's not about science at all. When you look at what's happening on campus, massive protests and rallies and gatherings are allowed on campus as long as they have to
so
do with the leftist agenda.
They're still
agenda.
Gathering. They're still assembling. But then they say, you're not allowed to go to class, but you can go protest racial injustice.
Absolutely. And that's fully encouraged by administrative officials. It's put out in student newspapers as one of the best things that happened on campus today. And they're really not even hiding their agenda anymore. I went to Colorado State University, which obviously we talked about.
Fort Collins, Colorado.
Visited a few times.
A couple times.
And the new president of CSU, Joyce McConnell, sent out an email to students at the beginning of the year. All students received it when they came back to campus, saying, we know at the university level that you guys might have varying political ideas ideologies on campus. But we want to make one thing very clear. No political belief will be acceptable for you to violate university, state, and local healthcare policies when it comes to COVID-19. If you make some sort of political decision to, I don't know, stand within 6 feet of someone or attend any gathering, even off campus, of more than 10 people, we will expel you from this university.
Done.
So
expel.
They're very, very forward with the fact that this isn't about science. This is actually about politics. And it's a really unique microcosm of culture happening on college campuses right now, where all of a sudden we're using the guise of science and healthcare to cover up for the fact that we're going more towards the train of leftist indoctrination and less towards actually exploring ideas on college campuses.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy, crazy situations. But in case you haven't also heard, everything on college campuses is racist in 2020. And I think that's true beyond college campuses, too. We're seeing that on social media and in corporate America as well. But anything remotely associated with anything has now become racist or white supremacist on college campuses. For example, the University of Rhode Island is going to remove their historic murals of World War II because there's too many white people in the murals. It creates this idea that we have a homogenous population.
Let's go slow here. University of Rhode Island removing a mural to World War II.
Because there's too many white people in the mural.
Yeah.
Ruminate on that for a minute.
Because that's 2020.
That's 2020. Everything has become white supremacy
is
America.
I want everyone to listen very carefully. Parents, when you send your kids to college, that's the type of radicalism and backwards thinking that your kids are being taught and validated, that the heroes that fought in World War II and our mural in remembrance of them, they take it down because they say those people were racist.
Which is so ironic, because if you know anything about World War II, it all has to do with not believing in the supremacy of one race or another, but just uplifting freedom for all people around the world. So we have gone so astray in the world of leftism and living in a completely alternate reality that we don't understand facts that have happened in U.S. history. But most alarmingly, what I love to see is when our Turning Point USA chapters get flagged on campus for hateful ideas or white supremacist ideas.
It's a daily occurrence.
And definitely painted my experience at CSU more than anything when it came to our local chapter there. Most recently at the University of Indiana, there's a local group called No Space for Hate. Gotta love that name. I'm sure they actually really mean that when it comes to difference in ideology. They released a report a couple months ago about white supremacist recruitment at the University of Indiana. And the report specifically mentions Turning Point USA as potentially this fringe group. They call themselves, they say that Turning Point USA is a right wing group that's not necessarily classified as white supremacist, but that some of the leaders of the organization have expressed public support for members of the Boogaloo movement, which they say is a militia movement seeking to replace our government with a white fascist ethnostate.
And we are looking at legal remedies for these sorts of things.
We've actually won several court cases in the last few months against universities, so I love when we get to have a little bit of a victory there.
Go brawl it out in court.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is shocking to me that the idea of even being remotely conservative automatically assumes that you are a white supremacist on college campuses. And our chapter leaders are dealing with that on a day-to-day basis. I really feel for everyone right now because I can probably not even relate very much to just how extreme their campus experience has been. And I graduated in 2019. So there you go. Things just get crazier and crazier. And I think a lot of that is really propagated by university professors. They're on campus for many, many years, often even decades, and eventually become tenured, where they have the freedom to say whatever they want with absolutely zero consequences. Mm-hmm. And that's when some of these really crazy things happen. So here's a good one for you. Charlie, if I told you 2 + 2 = 4, would you say that that has some sort of connotation with it? What do you think that means?
I think that's arithmetic.
Yeah, you think it's math, right? Because mm-hmm. it's based on, I don't know, reality of the universe and how
laws
the
of
universe
nature,
works.
And nature's God.
But there's a professor at Brooklyn College who is a math professor who tweeted this week that 2 + 2 = 4 as the equation, in her words, reeks of white supremacist patriarchy. I have no idea what that means. I have no idea how a simple equation based on the reality of the universe.
What was her reasoning behind this?
Just that it was, because it's the way that math is all automatically a white supremacist patriarchy.
What was this professor's name?
Her name is Lori Rubel at Brooklyn College in New York. So if you take Professor Rubel's class, be aware, 2 + 2 = 4, maybe a microaggression these days.
So she believes that math is a white supremacist construct.
Math in general, even something as simple as the first equation you ever learn in kindergarten.
It reeks of a white supremacist patriarchy.
Fancy words. Don't ask her if she knows what that means, because I doubt she really does, but sounds really good, I guess.
She says, Y'all know that the idea that math is objective or neutral is a myth. I'm reading her tweets here. Along, of course, math is not neutral. And it's creepy. And it reeks of white supremacist patriarchy.
Although she is a female math professor, so I have a hard time believing she's living in such a patriarchal world as a successful math professor at an American university.
Yeah. And some of the responses are, yes, this is exactly the type of thing we need to be teaching our kids. There are people on Twitter that think this.
Maybe they went to Brooklyn College.
Maybe they're the alma mater.
Maybe they were students of Professor Rubel's.
Yeah, and the American, the Smithsonian Museum said this exactly at the African American Museum, mm-hmm. that math is racist. And so for young mothers out there and young parents out there, please take note of this. Your kids are going to be learning these things at a younger and younger age, that the multiplication tables, division tables, math, it's racist. And there is no justification for it at all. Whatsoever.
Well, I think it's because there's this idea on college campuses that everything is racist that remotely has
to do with
an institution of America. Mm-hmm. And right now, the big hot button issue that we're talking about is police brutality, especially on college campuses. Mm-hmm. Lots of students are moving into their dorms littered with posters all over the wall saying Black Lives Matter is the best organization ever, and you have to agree with every single one of their ideas. There's a professor named Jennifer Harvey at Drake University who recently wrote an op-ed for CNN talking about how white parents in America need to start educating their white children at a very young age about the idea of backing the blue and the idea of law and order. She says that we need to be teaching white children the important components of racial justice activism, and that telling white children that police officers are good guys is actually perpetuating racism in American culture moving forward. So there's this slanderous idea that anything associated with law and order, especially people who give up so much to serve as our men and women in blue, are actually the most racist idea. Ever. Drake University.
Drake in Iowa.
In Iowa.
That's in Des Moines, Iowa. Heartland of our country. A lot of suburban Chicago kids go to Drake and the parents go into debt so their kids can learn from fools like this.
Yeah, I think it's an important opportunity for us to say, look, this isn't just happening at the Berkeleys and the Harvards of the world. It's
all
everywhere.
Across the country.
It's every campus in America that is dealing with this.
And I don't understand. I tell people all this time, if I cared about somebody, I tell them, do not go to college. I said, what do you want to learn from this nonsense? It's a pile of garbage.
Well, and you're required to learn about this nonsense to even graduate. They make you take diversity classes about queer expressions or the Black Lives Matter movement in order to even graduate and move on to get a greater job. So, you know, I'm not really sure I buy into the narrative anymore that a college degree is necessary to be successful. Most of the most successful people I know, yourself included, never even went to college.
Yeah, I mean, you went to college and you're doing great, but I don't think that college gave you a capacity to succeed.
If anything, I think college challenged me in new ways to push back against the establishment of college rather than just.
So your parents and you paid or went into debt. I don't know your financial situation, worked for scholarships, all of that, so that you then could go fight the system that you're paying for.
Yeah, amazing how that works, isn't it? But what's most scary to me on college campuses now, and I think we started to see this a couple of years ago, is that this idea of a culture war being an ideological one is very quickly transforming into an actual physical altercation more often than not. And we saw that obviously with one of our activists at the University of California, Berkeley, getting punched in the face while tabling on campus. Now, obviously, with the rising riots and violence and looting across the country, people are being targeted for their ideological beliefs. But most recently, there was a professor at Marshall University, Jennifer Mosher, who's been placed on administrative leave after she was teaching a Zoom class, which students were recording.
This is
West Virginia, of all places.
On the Ohio River.
California,
Southeast Ohio, right near West Virginia. This is not in Malibu, California.
And if you're listening to this right now and you're taking Zoom classes, which I know most of you probably are, film everything.
And then send it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com.
Absolutely. You
all
have an opportunity
film
to out
all of your professors.
Yes, absolutely.
Always.
So she was placed on administrative leave because a student was filming the Zoom class. Thank you to whoever filmed this, saying that she hopes that all Trump supporters die before Election Day in November, talking about President Trump choosing to hold peaceful protest rallies in the midst of COVID-19 and how irresponsible and reckless that behavior is. And in her words, Trump supporters need to die before the November election.
BLM Inc. hosts massive demonstrations with hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. And yet she wants Trump supporters to be dead in the streets.
Oh, and massive supporting rallies on campuses as well. I mean, you're seeing thousands of students turn up. They're not social distancing. Most of them aren't wearing masks. They're linking arm in arm, ignoring every sort of idea that the CDC has put forward and their university has put forward in order to advance this idea of racial justice and anti-racism, which is a nice, fun buzzword that's popped up in 2020. But as long as it fits your agenda, it doesn't really matter. The science won't affect that when it comes to a certain pandemic. Which is just terrifying. So I'm alarmed to see this idea of the culture war make that big transition. And I'm curious, Charlie, what you think of that. And how, are we going to continue moving into more violence and more rioting and looting and targeting people with actual violence rather than just mean words as we continue to move forward?
Yeah, it's inevitable. I mean, the transition from a civil, peaceful society to tribalism and conflict, the bridge between the two, or the wall, to kind of use an analogy, what prevents that flood from happening is freedom of speech. If you can't discuss your ideas, then you're not able to have any nuance. You have nothing but tribal groups. And so then you're, and then what you end up happening is lunatics like these professors, they win the argument because they shut up any sort of disagreement. So freedom of speech is a way where mature people are able to kind of discover truth, pursue truth, I should say, find their differences, find their agreements, and then you don't kill each other. That's basically it. This is why groups that have meaningless wars going back thousands of years, they weren't able to communicate with each other. They just fight. Like, okay, if you have speech, then you're able to actually not have to fight. There's really not a middle gap there. There's not anything in between. And the left knows exactly what they're doing. The Democrats know what they're doing. Joe Biden knows what they're doing. We are bouldering towards a civil war. And this, that's where this goes, is where eventually people are going to start killing each other. And I don't want it that way. I don't. In fact, I think that's almost a hard thing to talk about. But if you look in the streets of Louisville right now, where you look at people that are burning down Louisville, they have riot shields, anarchist gear, Molotov cocktails, everything waiting for them after a complete lie that the police wrongfully killed Breonna Taylor, which is not true at all, where Breonna Taylor was still doing business with her ex-boyfriend, the drug dealer, and currently dating another boyfriend who tried to kill a cop. So she was not really dealing with good people. Let's put it that way. You know, she had an affinity in the romantic realm for criminals. And the cops knock on the door. It was a no-knock raid. They still knock on the door. They come in. He shoots at them, and she gets caught in the crossfire. She was not in her bed. Not defending that she should die, but she was in the crossfire. Okay. Right. Grand jury, who I'm sure was very pressured to do an indictment, still did not do an indictment. This was not a prosecutor. This is a grand jury. This is of the peers of the people of Louisville, which I'm sure was a multiracial jury. That doesn't matter. Instead, the tribal group, BLM Incorporated, they just want nothing more than the arson of America. They want to tear us up from within. And this all stems from the universities. This all starts from the campuses. When you do not have dialogue, when you do not have discussion, when you do not have people that are able to disagree in a marketplace, you will get to tearing each other apart. And I wish it wasn't that. I don't want it to be that way. That's why I have said many times, I'm waiting for Democrats to come on my show. I'll go on. They won't have me on their show, and they won't come on my show, because for them, speech is a threat to their power. Instead, they would rather have baseball bats than speech. And there's some good liberals that'll come on. We had James Lindsay and we had Peter Boghossian. They're great. And I want to give them credit for that. But they are the exception, not the rule. And so I want to just kind of make this point that if we get back to a country where you can agree or disagree, that's a very healthy thing. However, if you send your kid to college, or if you support your college financially, in one way or the other, you are playing into this idea of the disintegration of America. A lot of really good patriotic Americans that are listening to this, and I'm not actually anti-college. That sounds weird. I'm anti-sending your kid to college right now. I'm pro the idea of college. It does not exist anymore, which is a marketplace of ideas. Look, a lot of you guys are heroes, police officers or first responders, and paying out of your own pocket for gear you need to do is a problem. All kinds of departments across the nation, they deal with constrained budgets and outdated gear, but there's still a job to do, and you need to get the gear to do it. Hunting for military or first responder discounts has historically required going from one website to another, creating multiple accounts or logins to make purchases, and jumping through various hoops to verify your service. Don't you wish there was one place you could just visit and
carefully crafted selection of deals from military, first responders, and One Stop. GovX works directly with brands to negotiate the best prices possible because you deserve the gear you need at the prices you've earned. Plus, you can trust that the gear you're ordering is 100% authentic, direct from the manufacturer. That's why you guys need GovX. So if you're an American to service, a current or former member of the military, firefighting, frontline medical, or law enforcement community, or the emergency medical, join GovX for free and enjoy a community that honors and gives back to patriots like you. If you've got a military first responder background, visit govx.com and sign up for free for instant access to tons of deals and a community that honors your service. So right now, you guys go to govx.com, use the promo code Kirk for $15 off first orders of $50 or more. govx.com, promo code Kirk. Isabel, would you agree that high school seniors are generally more mature than college seniors?
Absolutely, 100%. And that sort of taps into this idea of millennials versus Gen Z, too. We love to say at Turning Point USA, Gen Z is Gen Free, because my generation, 1997 or later Americans, I'm at the oldest bracket of this new generation, saw what happened with millennials on college campuses.
Yeah, I'm late and we thought, I'm 93.
And we thought, you know, I want nothing to do with that. I want nothing to do with the insanity that I'm seeing my older sister, my cousin, my friend who's a few years older than me go through. That's just absolutely ridiculous. And so I think there's a little bit of cultural pushback happening with Gen Z right now on college campuses. The students themselves are more conservative, they're more bold, they're more outspoken, but the pushback from their administration is even louder about forcing leftism onto you, forcing leftism into your classes and your curriculum. And honestly, students who are attending college right now are supporting that in one way or another because they have to deal with it in one way or another to graduate. So I'm very supportive, especially this fall with everything crazy happening with COVID-19. Of students taking a gap year, taking some time off, analyzing, you know, is this really the best move for me? I think that should be more popular.
Well, yeah, and I see college seniors all the time. They have hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt or tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Very little skills. They're entering a job market that has been totally destroyed by these shutdowns, which was a huge mistake.
Absolutely.
And then they also have really no understanding of the great ideas that built America. And we have here a couple test cases of 18-year-olds that have taken gap years that work with us at Turning Point USA. You know, I'm thinking of Mikey McCoy, Rob McCoy's son, and it's September. He decided not to go to college for a year. He has his own apartment, no debt. He's saving money. Mm-hmm. He's working every day. All of his friends are in college doing Zoom classes, going into debt. Why would you do that?
It makes absolutely no sense.
And I ask parents, they say, they have to. I say, think a little bit more creatively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to reinforce this idea. What happens on college campuses does not stay on college campuses.
That is so true. And especially when I talk to older Americans, there seems to be this sentiment that's existed for several decades that, oh, young people are always a little crazier. But once they get to the quote unquote real world, then they'll wake up and they'll realize that, you know, these fringe ideas are so crazy and they'll conform more regularly to what we consider normal traditional ideas. That could not be farther from the truth. And we're seeing right now in 2020 what's playing out, what happens when very extreme leftist ideas graduate with us and then get to the streets of Kenosha, get to the streets of Chicago and San Francisco. This is the reality if we keep letting this full-blown leftism happen on college campuses.
Yeah, and again, these students have no net worth. They're negative $30,000, negative $50,000, negative $70,000 in debt. They have no skills. And then we pack them like sardines into these urban cities where they own nothing. They're just renting. And after a couple years where they just work minimum wage jobs because they have no skills, they're going to lose faith in the system and they're going to want to burn the system down. And then these very well-meaning suburban parents say, I don't know where I went wrong. Where did my kids go wrong?
Yeah.
What skill do they have? Okay, they went to college. What's their skill? What can they do that somebody else can't do? Well, they've got a psychology degree. No, what's their skill?
Mm-hmm. And like, what's unique about their story?
If they have an engineering degree, they'd be like, oh, yeah, they can code. They can program. They can do advanced mathematics. Like, okay. But if you just go to get a piece of paper and you don't have a skill – and people say, well, I'm studying communications. Okay, that's fine. But usually communications degree do the worst job of teaching kids how to actually communicate in the real world. I mean, I talk to these communications graduates sometimes. It's like, you got a communications degree? Like, no offense
the
to
irony.
Them. I don't think so. And so I think that what you're saying here, though, is parents need to liberate their thinking and say, what if my kid doesn't go to college? And I say, this is a thought experiment. How much – I don't want to be on the spot, Isabel, but it probably cost you –
$200,000 all throughout graduate and undergrad? It's a lot of money, right?
Less than that. I was pretty fortunate to get lots of scholarships and in-state tuition. I was supposed to go to a very expensive, nice brand-name school in California, and actually 2 weeks before freshman year of college made the choice to stay at my large public in-state university.
The right choice.
More people need to make that decision, yeah. I'll tell you what. I have way too many friends in debt. And luckily, through that, was able to save up enough money to even graduate school debt-free because I had the opportunity to spend a little bit more money for 1 year. But even still, I mean, it is just astronomical how much the cost of college has risen because we're in this cycle where the government will keep giving loans as long as the school keeps raising tuition, and we are just always on the hamster wheel of the increasing cost of college.
And I tell parents, and I'm going to tell students this right now, that if you have the money saved, what if you started a business? What if you got a job in the market? You don't have to enter right into this endless cycle of debt and of bad ideas. And so it's a very important takeaway. What other examples do you have?
Well, there's a couple more, but I really want to ask you just generally speaking. Obviously, there's a crazy situation happening on campuses right now where professors can get away with saying whatever they want. Students are feeling really stifled. They're feeling isolated if they don't agree with their professors. Everything is racist, you know, unless you're conservative, and then you can think a little bit outside of that. And some students still have the freedom to do that. But really, where does this all stem from, and where can we move forward from here to encourage a different state of reality on college campuses?
I mean, I have a couple answers to that. It's the universities play a huge role, but it's also the way that parents have been parenting their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an unpopular opinion. I got to know your parents. They've done the right thing. They taught you about conservative values and the Constitution very early on in life. But a lot of parents have just given their kids off to the state and hope that they come back with values. You give your kids to the state, they're not going to learn about why America is a beautiful country, our founding values, first principles. They're not going to learn that. And so at a more root cause issue, I think that this is how parents that have abdicated their responsibility in the involvement of the education of their children. Now, were you homeschooled? I don't know if you were or not.
I was not homeschooled, but we definitely talked about it a few times. And growing up, that became a moment of concern for my parents. I mean, they were always very involved in what we were learning. And honestly, if COVID-19 has done one good thing for parents with younger kids this year, it's the opportunity to listen to what their teachers are saying when they're in these Zoom classes learning from home. I know several elementary school teachers went viral on Twitter saying they were so concerned about parents being able to hear about their curriculum because they had a moral duty and a moral responsibility to educate about
racism.
Some
school districts in Missouri, for example, were making the parents sign waivers that they would not go listen in on what their kids were being taught.
Which is shocking.
If these teachers and professors are afraid of what they are saying to go public, you should pull your kid out of that institution. Every parent should go to the college they're paying for and say, I want a copy of every single class my kid has been learning from. And if the university says no, say why? I thought these are people supposed to be rocket scientists, but I'm paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
I paid for that time. I paid for that 90 minutes with Dr. Liberal about why America's awful. So tell me why I cannot see that lecture. And so look, that's one of the ways it stems from. But also I talk about this, and this is something that we as conservatives don't talk about enough, which is the material side of this. And so there's an ideological and a material side. The left only focuses on the material side. They never focus on the ideological side.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives almost only focus on the ideological side, and they don't focus on the material side. And the material side, which is – and this is – people say like, oh, it's a Marxist view to believe this. Of course it's not. I mean, it's just a silly thing to say. But if you have people that are 28 years old and they're in debt and they don't own property and they have no skills – do not be surprised when they want to burn down the world, even if they weren't directly exposed to all this indoctrination or they don't believe it. So kind of the popular conservative view is saying they're only burning down because of the ideas they were stuffed with.
Mm-hmm.
Completely agree with that. But if you just kind of don't mention that a lot of these young people don't have any meaningful work, they're not getting married, they have no romantic relationships, I think it's both those things coupled together. And I think we as conservatives need to talk more about what the left has been talking about. Yes, student loan debt's a real problem. I don't think we should forgive it, but it's a real problem. And when you have student loan debt, you're going to want to burn everything down if you don't have a job. We as conservatives say, oh, it's because we brainwashed them early on. It's totally true. I agree with that. You see what I'm saying? Because the side of ideas and values and morals, here's the kind of the equation is you can have the best morals in the world, but you'll become dispirited as a 29-year-old
and you will leave the church and leave Christianity if your life materially does not get better. And I had this conversation very briefly with Ben Shapiro, and he did not view it this way. He said that people still stayed faithful in the Great Depression. It doesn't matter their, you know, socioeconomic status. I think there's a good argument. I think that's, there's some validity to that. But I also think that in life, the way you basically judge success is my life getting better year after year? Am I getting married? Am I having kids? And when you have 29-year-olds that have nothing they can point to where they say, yes, my life has gotten better since the time I was 24. Their debt burden has gone up. I mean, their entire upswing of life has actually just been kind of a downward trajectory in a nihilism. And so that's something I think we have to get right. So I have some very bold ideas. I think that we should sell federal lands for basically pennies on the dollar to people under the age of 30 to go have families. I think that we should – in Arizona, it's almost all federal land. Governor Ducey and President Trump should partner and say we're going to sell 3,000 acres for young families to be able to just start a community. You own it. You got it. Like go build a home. Start your own community. Seriously.
I love that idea.
And I think that we should stop building buildings over three stories. I think tall buildings have been the death of America. I think that the more we have young people living vertically and not horizontally, the less likely they are to own property. When a young person doesn't own something, they're willing to destroy anything.
Well, you lack a sense of purpose, and I think that goes back to your college experience. You know, young Americans are being taught from every angle of society in their class, on their social media, with who's running for president, that America is a failed idea and there is no hope and we cannot save it and life sucks. And your life sucks, most importantly. And so I think we lack this idea of a sense of purpose and a drive to make our lives better, because a lot of that does have to do with personal choice and personal responsibility, but we're not teaching that anymore. And the students who start college with that idea of excitement and personal drive and a willingness to work very hard to succeed becomes so downtrodden because they are so targeted.
They become deflated.
Yeah, they do. We lose the stars in our eyes for the things that we dream in to turn them into reality. And I think a lot of that has to do with not being prepared and not understanding what's going to be confronting you in your college experience. And so parents who are listening to this, if you're a high school senior listening to this, you need to be aware that college is not all the fun football tailgates. It's not all the fun parties. And it is those things, absolutely. But in reality, if you're walking in as a conservative student or even just as an open-minded student that's not already to the left of the political spectrum, you are going to get targeted. And we're seeing so much of that on college campuses. You know, automatically every mainstream Republican or conservative is labeled a Nazi, labeled a white supremacist, anti-woman. I got a lovely DM from a current student where I used to go to school the other day, never met this student in my life, saying, don't come back to our school. You know, as an alum, you're not welcome here. And we're talking about you in our class.
Colorado State.
At Colorado State. And I can't support a racist rapist. She referred to me as such a thing because I'm supporting President Trump, which makes absolutely no sense. Yeah. But those are the types of names that your child or you might get called on a college campus. So being aware of that and empowered about that on the onset and realizing that there's no validity to those claims can help you succeed during your four years.
You have my commitment, Isabel. As soon as the country opens up, which will be after the election, you and I should go speak at Colorado State University.
Oh, we would have together. Some fun at CSU.
That would be great.
For sure.
We'll do Isabel Brown Returns with Charlie Kirk, and we'll see how tolerant the left is.
You know, at CSU, every ethnic studies professor referred to me as that turning point girl, so I thought I'd make up a little t-shirt the next
time
I go back to CSU.
That turning point girl.
That turning point girl. I wear that as a badge of honor still to this day. But, you know, I was so shocked as a student because I didn't expect any of that. I didn't expect to be called that white supremacist girl on campus. I didn't expect to get death threats or have my address doxed, and all of those crazy things happen. And I know that doesn't happen to every conservative student, but it happened to me because I was willing to be bold and push back against this sea of leftism. And I wish I would have known that up front because, you know, we like to pretend sometimes that it doesn't hurt our feelings when that does happen. But of course it hurt my feelings the first time a close friend of mine called me a racist or a white supremacist. I went home and was miserable for several days because I couldn't imagine that someone I had called a friend and genuinely thought they understood who I was believed I lived my life that way. And had I known that that was part of the package of being a conservative on a college campus, even not being an outspoken one, I think I would have had a thicker skin moving into college to begin with and didn't have to grow that through my experience, but would be more confident to fight back against that from the onset.
Yeah, no, I tell people, and you're a great example of this, that if you're going to get into politics and get into the fight, be prepared to lose all your friends and be prepared to really pay a price. And I hope the adults listen to this, you know, really think carefully. Here you have Isabel, who was a college activist at Turning Point. By the way, we have thousands of amazing activists at Turning Point USA that are fighting for our country. And if you're an adult out there and you're not in the arena, why are you letting the kids fight for you? And that's what I tell adults all the time. I say,
Because now that I'm 26, I can kind of look at this a little bit more intergenerational than I did 4 years ago. I can say, because I go to these, you know, events and they're like, oh, yeah, keep fighting. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that. But you know that our kids are literally putting their life on the line at these campuses, their entire social life, everything.
What well, even sometimes doing? Their literal life, too. I mean, yes. We are getting death threats and our addresses are posted online.
And these journalists are like, well, this person received the death threat once. I'm like, all of our kids receive death threats all the time.
All the time. That's part of the package.
That's just
these
part of
days.
The game. I mean, mm-hmm. what's the big issue with the death threat thing? I mean, that's normal. It's part of the game. And that's if you're a conservative, they want you dead.
Yeah, and they are even saying it now in their college classes. They're willing to go out there and put their name on the record, knowing probably that the class is being recorded saying that. So there are no consequences for these professors these days,
totally.
It seems. And that's the culture that really has arisen in 2020.
That professor said she wants all the Trump supporters dead.
Dead before the
Marshall
November
University.
Election.
At least she got put on leave, so that's good.
Yeah, well, hopefully that leads to some sort of positive movement, although I'm skeptical these days with college campuses and administrations.
She'll probably end up getting promoted in some sort of an award or something.
Yeah, in a roundabout way that we won't all be able to see, unfortunately. But, you know, I think this is a great conversation, just about everyone taking a moment. COVID-19 has been an interesting experience for our country, to say the least. I think there's been a lot of horrible things that have been associated with this pandemic. And as a biomedical sciences policy gal, which is what I have my master's degree in, we've handled this all the wrong way. Don't get me wrong. I could spend a whole other podcast talking about that. But it's also given us a chance to reevaluate the institutions in our country that are and are not working. And across the board, education is one of those institutions we can think about. You know, kids are going to kindergarten on Zoom now, and they're also going to their college campus classes on Zoom. And so I think parents, grandparents, people who are mentors and authority figures in young adults' lives have a unique chance right now to listen in, to actually lend an ear to what's happening, because otherwise you have no idea what happens in your child's psychology 100 class or even their math class, apparently. And all of a sudden, racism, the idea that America is a failed experiment, that we need to be completely dismantled, that the nuclear family is evil. I hear a lot about that from our students in conversations on social media. That is what's being taught to your children, and it should be very alarming to you. And we should take a moment to think about that in 2020.
And address root causes, which is the universities, the school system, how we educate our kids. Look, we've got a very different kind of sponsor for this episode, the Jordan Harbinger Show, which is a podcast you really should be listening to. And I know that every day somebody tells you that you have to listen to some podcast, so you nod and say, sure, and then you never listen to it. Don't let that happen here. Jordan's show, which Apple named one of the best of 2018, is aimed at making you a better informed, more critical thinker, so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening, even inside your own brain. Each episode is a conversation with a different fascinating guest, and I've interviewed Jordan before. He's a great guy. He's terrific, lots of energy, very smart. In one episode, Jordan talked to a hostage negotiator for the FBI who offers techniques on how to get people to like and trust you, which sounds useful and kind of disturbing at the same time. So right now, you go to Jordan Harbinger Show, and you guys can listen to the FBI negotiator or the one about the story of a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle. Or how about one of the most important archaeological finds of the century? It's just interesting stuff. So right now, you guys go to search the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Jordan is a friend. It's worth checking out. Do it right now. Jordan Harbinger Show. And Isabel, can you talk about social media as well? You and I were talking about the film The Social Dilemma. I did watch the whole thing. I'm actually doing another podcast just on the film because we've received so many emails from people on it. I actually had to watch through somebody else's Netflix account because I deleted Netflix because they are the pro-pedophile over-the-top service. They think very highly of pedophilia at Netflix with their latest movie, Cuties. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Susan Rice and Obama have not been to answer for it. But anyway, I watched The Social Dilemma. Thought it was very interesting. What role does social media play in what young people consume and how people are interpreting what's actually happening?
Well, frankly, social media is everything. I think especially right now when everything is digital and people lack the opportunity to connect one-on-one in person, social media is your connection to your friends and your family. Mm-hmm. It's the way that you get your news. It's the way that you express your opinions. But it's this weird, distorted world that I think we don't fully understand when we first open your Instagram app at the beginning of the day and start scrolling through. You have a very carefully curated set of posts that you are allowed to see based on algorithms. And so I think we're creating these ideological silos for America's next generations, that they don't understand how to communicate with people who are different from them. They don't understand how to articulate the fact that they may be wrestling with an idea. And it's very alarming. But the vast majority of millennials and Gen Z, well over 50%, get all of their primary news from social media. And let's take a second to just ask ourselves, what does that even mean? It means we're not reading full-length stories. We're not watching full-length videos. We see a five-line headline and think, okay, I know everything I need to know about that subject.
I know everything about Breonna Taylor because the Washington Post said it.
So all of our knowledge is, you know, an inch deep and a mile wide, and all of a sudden everyone thinks they're an expert on subjects like the Breonna Taylor case, on subjects like the Black Lives Matter Incorporated movement. But in reality, they're not, and we've lost the skill to do the digging of what things actually mean and start asking those really hard questions. So in many ways, social media is a great tool. It's an opportunity for us to reach kids who may not have heard conservative ideas ever shared in their family or in their classroom. And I love that part about what we do at Turning Point USA and our jobs in particular. But it's also a really interesting world that we don't really fully understand. You know, not all of our content will reach every single person that's following us. And even the things that we put out don't even start a very deep conversation about the future of America, about why freedom is important, why we need to create this culture moving forward that returns to our roots in America. So I'm hopeful that social media can do more of a deep dive into the future.
No, I agree. And I think that My issue – I will say a couple of thoughts on that. I think that conservatives are actually more equipped to have disagreeable conversations than liberals just because we're always around liberals all the time, and liberals aren't. We go to – you know, our kids go to liberal universities, liberal schools, liberal family members. We just have this – we're better at that. Liberals are completely unequipped for it. And my – a couple problems with social media, the first of which is it is designed to be chemically addictive. It is. And it's really good at it. That's why I've deleted all the social media from my phone, and our amazing team helps post for me. I just text them what I want and they put it up. They're amazing. They're incredible. I have the blessing of having that opportunity because I was spending so much screen time of just going through Instagram. And I actually, it hit me four or five months ago when I first deleted everything. And I deleted Twitter first, then I deleted Instagram. When I was going through Instagram and I started to just see that I was seeing more posts of things I wasn't even liking, but just spending more screen time on. I wasn't even liking it. I said, they're monitoring my screen time.
Oh, they absolutely are. They listen to you too, by the way.
They listen to everything. And by the way, these parents say all the time, well, Charlie, what am I supposed to do? Why are you giving your kids a phone? I went to high school without a cell phone. It was actually awesome.
I was a sophomore in high school when I got my first cell phone, everyone made fun of me.
This is the craziest thing. I don't understand this at all. And I don't mean this in condemnation. I mean this from a position of love and inquiry and compassion. Why do high school kids need phones?
They don't.
No, I don't. I mean, seriously. I mean, I got my first phone when I was a senior in high school, and it was a brick. And by the way, this was 2012. This was not – this wasn't 1982, okay?
Very true.
No, but I tell people, I say, why do they need it? All their friends have it. Okay, all your friends are doing marijuana. You want them to do that too?
Exactly. I mean, that's such a slippery slope argument.
What is the capacity? Well, I want them to be able to call me. Okay, then get the jitterbug.
Yeah. I remember those. I think they were called Fireflies when I was a little kid.
No, I think it's called Jitterbug. I'm going to look it up. No, it's.
I do remember those, though. No texting. You can only call a certain, you know, prescribed set of numbers. But
I'm going to get one of these, by the way. I'm not kidding. This is going to be my new phone soon.
Absolutely. You should. I mean, it's so much less distracting and saves so much time, too. And I love that you said social media is addictive because it is. And from a scientific perspective, we analyze this all the time during my graduate program at Georgetown.
It's going to be my new phone.
Yes, I love this.
I'm going to go backwards.
But it is. Every time that somebody likes one of your pictures or has a follow request, you actually get a release of hormones in your
brain,
which is dopamine, exactly like what happens when you do drugs. So we should be talking more about this. We've addicted our children to the idea of using their phones. Even people that I know, my younger sister, for example, she can't even go on vacation without keeping her Snapchat streaks alive. So she'll give her friends her login information to Snapchat so that they can do it while she's on vacation for her. And I don't think she means poorly because of that. I just genuinely believe that is such a big part of culture for the younger version of Generation Z that nobody's really talking about these days.
Yeah, and I think it's a huge part of it. And young people are getting all their information from social media or professors. And again, I mean, I'm the first one to admit it. We have 7 million followers combined on all platforms on social media. We've benefited from this. But to believe that there isn't a reverse side of the coin, that there isn't a huge cost to this, it would be foolish. I mean, you're seeing more young people that are single that are 30 years old than married.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing we're on pace to have 500,000 less children next year than this year. That's a very, very serious problem in our country. And young people are socially addicted to their devices. They really are.
So between devices and what's happening on college campuses, I tend to see a very common thread circulating around free speech and that really being something that we fight
issue.
For more than anything else at Turning Point USA. I don't think most of you probably know, the vast majority of millennials want to scrap the First Amendment. They don't think that it's relevant to our society these days. They want to ban hate speech, whatever the heck they think that means. And if you ask them, it's a different answer every day. But that's really the root cause of all of these problems I think we're experiencing in 2020.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of how Turning Point can best do this in a way that will get attention. And it could probably get out of control. But I was thinking of something where we do an event where you literally just have an open mic where people can say anything. It'll get out of control because you'll have people that are, you know, the flat earth people, which is fine. They should have a right to talk too.
They should too.
You know, but I think there has to be something to be said of it would be a great documentary, be a phenomenal documentary, where you have a 16 or 17 year old or even a 20 year old, that'd be better, 20 year old sit in an auditorium. Could they, without screaming something, listen to a really bad idea? Could they do that? Probably not.
Probably not.
Right?
We are living in a culture that's all about talking. What can I say? What can I do to get my idea out there? We've completely lost the idea of listening. And when I was in high school, my mom forced me to join the high school speech and debate team. And I grumbled for weeks. I said, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. You're ruining my life. You know, all the lovely teen angst stuff. But I showed up for a few weeks in a row. And then I completely fell in love with it because debating and having peaceful discussions isn't actually at all about what you say. It's about your ability to sit back and listen and realize what the other person is saying so that you'll have an appropriate response. They're not teaching that to high schoolers and college students these days. And that's why we've just completely lost the ability to not only articulate what we believe in a peaceful way, but listen to anything that's remotely in disagreement with what we're saying.
That's right. And if you dare disagree, the totalitarian in them will want to silence you and shut you up. But yeah, the freedom of speech issue is really important, but it's even more than that. It's the self-censorship issue that worries me the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that because of the way the courts are going and President Trump will probably get another Supreme Court justice, I think we're still going to have freedom of speech in our country. So that – meaning – what do I mean by that? Meaning governmentally. I think you'll still be able to get a poster and go outside. I think that will probably be protected. But there's two other issues that I really fear about. It's not actually the governance side of it. I actually don't fear that much. I don't think that they're going to be the government that's going to be criminalizing you. I'm worried about the corporations such as the big tech companies, which we as conservatives have to stop worshiping corporations. Mm-hmm. It's a huge problem. And so many conservatives are bought and paid for by big tech through their think tanks and through all of their different auxiliaries. They go, we can't break up the tech companies. Why? What do they produce? They sell you.
Mm-hmm.
They sell you. It is surveillance capitalism. It's wrong. It's really dangerous. So why can't we break them up? Tell me, I mean, is it just because you're dogmatic about it?
Mm.
I don't like that. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is the self-censorship of people think they're going to lose their friends and lose anything that they care about if they say something that's not correct.
Right.
And so those two things paired together, in some ways, the government has now been less important in the fight for speech for the first time in our country's history. So usually the government was always the biggest threat of shutting you up. So the government would come say, you can't say this, you can't assemble here. Now, for the first time in our country, there are two other bigger threats to shut you up, which is private corporations and private individuals that will just basically punch you in the face, not be tried for it, or just the bully in school that will come after the teacher, the professor. So now it actually takes a non-governmental approach. Now the cultural landscape is actually more important than just filing a lawsuit for freedom of speech. I actually think we're going to be okay that way. I actually think that we're winning those.
Consistently we are actually, especially with Turning Point USA.
Yeah, and minus the religious liberty part of it, which is a really important thing, and I don't want to discount that, you know, the right for the church to assemble. So that's an important thing, the contribution. But I think that generally we're going to win those lawsuits. Mm-hmm. I do. I don't think there's a plan right now to say, what if Google doesn't want you to be able to speak anymore? What's the plan?
Yeah. Well, every day we're seeing Twitter accounts shut down for sharing an idea of how to treat a virus, even not anything about policy or politics, but even just about science. So we're seeing this idea of objective truth being completely erased.
Yes.
And what an interesting commentary about people just being afraid to say anything to begin with. Culturally, it is more important for people to silence themselves and tell themselves in an internal monologue, what I'm about to say is not culturally okay.
Yes.
That's a problem. And that really starts, I think, at the root of our college campuses.
Yes. And so we have long had rules societally of what people can do, right? And so, for example, we say that it wouldn't be good to be able to do drugs on the side of the street. Okay, Los Angeles says you can do that, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible. It's a wasteland. Now we have rules that are built in for what you can think. That's a really dangerous thing, where it's not that if you even don't say something. Then think about this for a second. It's not if you say it. It's if you don't say it, you're going to be published. So
It's not that you say, I hate BLM, which I'm not saying I believe that. I don't – I think that's hate's too strong of a word. But let's say I think BLM's a terrorist group. Okay, I think that's true. Okay, BLM Incorporated. Let's just say you're silent. Why didn't you post the black square?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really know how I feel. You're a bad person.
Silence is violence, as they always like to say.
So what does that mean? What do they mean by that, Isabel?
Yeah, so assuming you say something that's in contradiction to what the leftist mob wants you to say, they're saying your speech is violent. It's harming someone's safety, and that's what they consider to be hate speech. But lately, there's also been this idea that you failing to join the mob, that you failing to say anything, failing to post a black square on your Instagram, failing as a company, yes, for example, to post your commitment to anti-racism all over your website – that your silence is also actually violence and threatening someone's safety or even just emotional well-being.
That's totalitarianism, that if you don't do something, then you're the problem.
Hmm.
Isabel, people can follow you how?
At The Isabel Brown on Instagram and Facebook, and on Twitter at The Isabel B, and everywhere on our Turning Point USA channels.
We're
going
to have you
well.
Back, professorwatchlist.org, tpusa.com. We have some very good announcements. You have some things coming up very soon that I think
sure
are very
do.
Exciting.
Yes, indeed.
Turning Point USA and everybody, if you guys really are just fed up with the way this country is going, go to tpusa.com, chip in some money, do something to help us, tpusa.com. Also, you guys can support our program at charliekirk.com/support. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. You guys want a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk, show to your podcast provider, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com. Any closing thoughts?
I don't know. If you're on college campuses this fall, stay strong. We're with you and keep fighting back against all this craziness.
Once these campuses open, we are going to go on the most important college tour ever. I can't wait.
Me neither. It's going to be so much fun.
I can't wait to get back in front of leftists. I have not talked to a leftist in such a long time.
Too long. Too long.
And it's just not
the
same if they do a Zoom call. I want to look at you. I mm-hmm. want to talk to you. I want to convince you.
It's going to be here before we know it.
TPUSA.com, professorwatchlist.org. Isabel, thanks so much.
Thanks, Charlie.